You're tuned to Norfolk Works, and I'm Hazel Kahn. My guest today is Michael Zweig, retired Stony Brook professor, author, and a lifelong labor activist. Michael, welcome to Norfolk Works and to WPKN. It's thrilling to find an ardent listener like you who's also a neighbor like you.
I've listened to PKN since I arrived at Stony Brook on the faculty in 1967, and so I've been listening for 51 years. I retired from Stony Brook, that's right, in the end of 2016. I was a professor of economics at Stony Brook, and I was also the director and the founder of the Center for Study of Working Class Life, which was housed in the economics department but involved people from all over campus and really all over the world.
Were you always as active an activist as you are now?
My first political work was handing out flyers for Adlai Stevenson in 1956 on 7 Mile Road in Detroit. When I got to the University of Michigan in 1960, the student sit-ins had just begun in North Carolina, and I got involved in the Civil Rights Movement and the campaign to integrate Woolworths. There was a Woolworths in Ann Arbor. So I got involved with that. I got involved in organizing the initial stages of the Peace Corps in 1960-61. But I was involved politically trying to figure out how to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for quite a long time.
Have you succeeded?
I think in some ways it's a better place.
Do you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Why?
Well, because I think women have a better role and more equal role in society. I think we've gotten rid of Jim Crow. I think we overthrew the Dixiecrats out of the Democratic Party. And, of course, now they're in the Republican Party. They're still there, but they're, you know, we made some progress. I think the country's, in many ways a better place. In many ways, you know, we've gone backwards on labor rights, on some other things, especially in the last 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. But it's... It's a history of activism that I think was worth doing and had some payoff. The activism that I'm involved in now has to do with the aftermath of the Bernie campaign, Bernie Sanders. I was active in labor for Bernie, and the New York Progressive Action Network is an aftermath of the Bernie campaign here in New York. So I work with that, particularly on single payer and the New York Health Act, and trying to get single payer health systems state by state here in New York. So that's one thing that I'm mm-hmm. doing. And I've been long-time union activist in my union, my local, which is Teachers Local, American Federation of Teachers, that represents the faculty and staff all over State University of New York. Stony Brook is part of the State University, that's right. And there's about 30 campuses all around the state, university centers and four-year schools and some technical colleges.
I want to interrupt you and tell you that we did a story yesterday on campus food pantries.
Oh, yeah.
And of 17 colleges on Long Island, 6 of them have food.
I think at Stony Brook there is, because we have homeless students at Stony Brook. We have very poor students. And I've had homeless students in my classes. It's a very serious problem.
They were not necessarily homeless. They had food insecurity.
Yeah, well, there's also homelessness. People sleeping in the library, people sleeping in their mm-hmm. cars, people going, you know, couch surfing, with their friends mm-hmm. from different classes. There's a lot of suffering in this country. There really is a lot of people suffering very, very severe hardships. And that's a problem that, I'm trying to address in one way or another. So I'm doing work with the Poor People's Campaign and trying to get people to be involved with the Poor People's Campaign here in New York State, in New York City. It is a Poor People's Campaign. It brings poor people into leadership, and it brings poor people's voices into the platforms where there are rallies or where there's demonstrations. There's always the actual people who are most sort of frontline communities, if you want, that are involved in giving leadership to it, in participating and planning the events and executing the events. So it is a movement. The original Poor People's Campaign was done 50 years ago in 1968 by Martin Luther King. But then he was assassinated and it was not followed through after his death. So in the last couple of years, there's been a drive to sort of revive the Poor People's Campaign with the same kind of breadth of vision of dealing with racism, militarism, poverty, and environmental devastation. And that movement now is being championed and led by Reverend William Barber from North Carolina, who I had up here at Stony Brook a couple years ago talking about the moral foundation of worker rights. And I'm also involved with U.S. Labor Against the War. It's a labor-based, union-based peace movement.
Against the war or against
the war? Well, we started out being opposed to the war in Iraq. And U.S. Labor Against the War got started in January 2003, in the run-up to the Iraq War. And so it was the war, just like Vietnam Veterans Against the War was around Vietnam. And now, what's the war? We are involved in the labor movement, in my union, other teachers' unions, hospital workers, railroad workers, iron workers, all kinds of different unions all around the country, 160 locals and central labor councils and state federations of labor, all trying to address and to challenge militarized foreign policy. So that we are challenging and trying to get a peaceful resolution on the Korean Peninsula. We're trying to deal with the war in Syria and try to have some kind of peaceful resolution there and not a militarized foreign policy that advances a $700 billion military budget and then shrinks the budget for education and for libraries and for everything else that people need for poor people and working people and most everybody. So I think that we have an agenda there through U.S. Labor Against the War inside the labor movement. It fits in with the Poor People's Campaign, which is, as Dr. King was, focused on militarism as well as poverty, racism, and environmental devastation. And all those things are related. Those things really do afflict the country in a way that there's synergy among them, and we need to address them all together. And that's what the Poor People's Campaign is trying to do. That's what Bernie was trying to do in his campaign, and that's the best we can do right now, and that's, you asked about the activism that I'm involved in, those are the pieces. Of course, writing and trying to articulate these issues in a way that people can say, oh, I get that.
You don't miss not being an academic anymore?
Well, I love to teach, and I have always loved to teach. So I do miss being in a classroom. I do not miss the commute. And, of course, I can continue to try to teach through my writing and through speaking in different environments, but I don't have a classroom to be involved with.
Do you feel you have to always struggle or push hard to get your ideas across?
It's always a push. It's always an extension to reach people who don't yet understand or know or are aware of whatever the question is. Even within the unions that are already affiliated, say, with U.S. Labor Against the War, the labor movement is under such attack, it is in such a defensive posture about a whole array of issues that it's difficult to get people's attention on foreign policy questions when they're just trying to save their contract or to organize a new shop and they're dealing with people getting fired, which is illegal. People have so much on their plate that is so urgent that it sometimes takes a bit of doing to get people to understand the importance of, say, taking on poverty and then getting involved in the Poor People's Campaign.
To see that interconnection that you were
talking about before. That's right. What we find is that actually, if you get a chance to talk to people and lay out what the connections are, it's not a hard sell. It's not like people don't get that. The problem is, what do you do with that information? How do you take that in the complexity of everybody's lives? Now you're really dealing with life. And how do you have an organizational capacity to actually do something with this? And that's what's interesting about the Poor People's Campaign and about U.S. Labor Against the War, is that those provide organizational capacities. So we can go to unions and we can go to domestic workers who are organizing and say, you know what, get involved over here and it'll all be part of the same movement and that'll advance your situation. You know, it's a question of what is a movement. You know, movement is some social upheaval which has many different fronts, many different aspects. And each person is in their own place, but understands and is truly part of something that's much larger than their own. We don't have that yet. What we have is different little things going on here, there, and the other place. We have Fight for 15, we have Black Lives Matter, we have the environmental stuff going on, we have Me Too. all different kinds of stuff that are happening, but they don't yet congeal into a mutually resonant challenge for power. And, you know, when it happens, you can't just make it happen. You can't wish it into existence. So you just keep at it and keep working and keep working, you know, and eventually the engine turns over and you got something going.
So you have to have patience of some kind.
Extreme patience. Patience and commitment. People emerge. Well, you recruit people in struggle. You carry a campaign into a shop or into a community or into a, wherever you're trying to organize. Mm-hmm. You carry that campaign in and you see who comes forward and who gets active and who wants to take it up. And then in the course of that, those people learn. That's how I learned. That's how we all learn. You know, I didn't know any of this stuff until I got engaged.
Yeah. So just, does that mean you're feeling quite optimistic about the struggle?
Well, I would say I share the attitude I found in South Korea when I was recently there. I would say hopeful, but not particularly optimistic. Mm. It's a long campaign we got going here in front of us. This is not an easy situation that we have in this country and in the world. And so over long periods of time, human societies have made progress. So you just have to have that patience and that length of vision, and in that sense, optimism. But I see a lot of stuff going on in this country that's hopeful. What happened in Parkland in Florida with mm-hmm. those kids who came from quite privileged backgrounds and were in all kinds of advanced placement classes, you know, and they were having their skills developed as juniors and seniors in high school, and all of a sudden they took those skills and they really did something. And not only did they do it on their own behalf, but they made sure that they had kids from the South Side of Chicago, kids from Philadelphia in there, they had kids from Brooklyn in there whose brothers and sisters had been killed in shootouts on the street, so that it was really something that crossed class lines and really brought a whole community of people together. It's extremely hopeful. You never know what is going to pop off and then last, or what comes up and dies away but leaves a mark somewhere. Mm. The same thing with Occupy Wall Street. That was a big flash. Where is it now? Well, it's in the 99%. You know, absolutely. That 1%, 99% is a brilliant formulation and encapsulation of the class divide in American society.
I want you to talk about South Korea.
Mm-hmm. U.S. Labor Against the War is interested in challenging American militarized foreign policy. Last year, and that would be in 2017, the Trump administration was promoting a militarized foreign policy with regard to the Korean Peninsula. So there was a delegation of American peace people. There were only four people that went, hosted by the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions. Mm-hmm. And other sort of progressive peace-oriented Korean organizations. And among those four people was our executive director, our national coordinator, Rhys Chennault. He made contact in Korea with the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions. And in their discussions last year, it became clear that it would be helpful to bring a delegation of American trade unionists to Korea to meet with Korean counterparts and see whether we couldn't figure out some joint program that could advance a peaceful resolution. Now, this was done before all this sort of so-called peace broke out between North Korea and South Korea, between North Korea and the United States. When we finally went, which was for May Day, in May 1st, the International Workers' Day, 2018, we had our delegation in Korea meeting with and marching with the Korean trade union movement. This time it was 20 people, and it was just labor.
Of which you were one.
Of I was one, that's correct. Almost all young people, were in their 30s and 20s, because they were part of the international program at Tougaloo College. And they helped logistically, and they helped with documentation of the trip, with video and audio recordings, and developing the sort of the story. And now we're back and trying to figure out how to promote peaceful resolution and to make sure that the U.S. doesn't go back or doesn't sabotage whatever just came, and to work jointly with the Koreans. And we want to bring Korean trade unionists here.
Michael Zweig is talking about his work as a labor activist. This is North Fork Works on WPKN Radio.
There was a general agreement, a general common purpose. Mm-hmm. We met with the teachers union there. We met with people from the railroad workers union. We met with public service, public sector workers, metal workers. We met with a whole variety of different organizations, labor organizations, and peace groups. And it was quite an excellent exchange.
When will they come over, do you think?
Well, we're working on it now, and they treated us very well there, mm-hmm. and we hope to treat them well when they come here. I'd also been a couple of times to Iraq and worked with the Iraqi labor movement, again, through U.S. Labor Against the War. Our connections developed first in relation to Iraq and to the Iraqi labor movement. We've hosted Iraqi trade union leaders here three or four times. First time in 2005 that I helped to organize. And then I went myself as part of a small group of American labor people to a labor conference in 2009 that was in Erbil, in Iraqi Kurdistan, and then in 2012 again to Basra in the south, to a larger civil society conference that included environmental groups and women's groups. And the whole idea is that's common between the work we did in South Korea is people-to-people contact, where you really get down with the people who are involved, listen to what they have to say, and you learn from them as to what they are about. One of the things that has been so interesting to me is the commonality of issues. It's the same. We had six people here from all different unions, and they traveled to 26 cities in the United States, talking to American workers and students and wherever we could get them a venue where they could speak. And what they said was the following basic points. We've had a labor movement in Iraq since the 1920s, when the British came and they began to develop industry there. And as soon as you develop industry, you develop a working class. As soon as you develop a working class, that working class resists its condition and tries to advance its interests. And so we have that labor movement in Iraq. And it's under attack right now, in 2005. What we want and what we're fighting for is battle against privatization, the Iraqi resources and Iraqi public sector, public services. We don't want those things privatized. But the U.S. government, with its occupation force, is dedicated to privatization. We, the Iraqi labor movement, want a democratic labor movement that can organize, that has rights. We don't have rights to organize. We're challenged when we try to organize. We don't have the legal protections that we deserve and what we want, so we're fighting for legal protections for organizing. We think that there should be democracy and not sectarian politics, just we're the Iraqi people. Mm-hmm. And we are opposed to sectarian divisions. We don't have Shia trade unions and Sunni trade unions, and we have trade unions for workers. And we think that those unions are very central for true democracy. And then they said, and we oppose the American intervention and American occupation because that occupation gets in the way of us realizing each of these goals. Isn't that exactly what we're facing in the United States?
Absolutely.
Fighting against the privatization of public services, education, prisons, transportation, all kinds of privatization schemes. We're against it. It's bad. So when the Iraqis talk about these things, it resonates with American workers.
So you have the same vocabulary.
The same, and the same issues. Hostility to unions. Part-time workers, people working on short-term contracts and not full-time jobs. So what you have is an experience that unites countries, all the workers of these different countries, because we're all dealing with capitalism, with neoliberalism and the international regime of capital that is out to minimize, diminish, and make difficult the life of working people everywhere in the world. It's the same struggle, it's the same fight, as we say. And so that kind of unity and that kind of solidarity that arises from those contacts and for those meetings face-to-face, it's not just abstractions, right? Here's a real person telling you a real story. That's very powerful. And that's what we've been able to accomplish in these international exchanges.
It's very moving, too.
It certainly is. And to participate in it, to experience it. We're eager to bring the South Koreans here to see what experience that will, you know, convey to the American people. And that's one of the things that I'm trying to do in U.S. Labor Against the War.
Were you in on the foundation of?
Of U.S. Labor Against the War, yes, I was. I was part of the founding of it in 2003. I wasn't in the very, very first crew, which met in Chicago in January 2003. I was not at that meeting, but I was at the next one, which was in October 2003, also in Chicago. And that's where we founded the organization.
So it must be pretty tame for you to be living in Peconic after living in these in Detroit and in Chicago.
Peconic's a wonderful place. South Old Town is great.
Yeah, but it's not a hotbed of sort of revolutionary activity.
Well, you know, what I have found is that in every community and at every level of society, the same kinds of issues come up and the same aspirations and the same noble work and the same venality and mendaciousness, it's all here. I like being involved. I was involved for a long time on land use and planning issues here in South Old, the town, in the 1980s. And I was very much involved in organizing that with North Fork Environmental Council and South Old 2000, and we had the US-UK Planning Exchange Program and the North Fork Planning Conference. Then United Southold, which brought Tom Wickham and transformed the political kind of landscape. I was doing all of that. And we really made a difference in this town. And I think that the place is better for it. And I think most people in the town believe that it's better for it.
But I was actually thinking more about labor.
Well, yes.
In the restaurant industry and in the agricultural industry.
Well, that's true. That's part of the labor force out here. But don't forget that there's also hospital workers, teachers. There's also mechanics. There's all kinds of workers out here, and they are in unions. The teachers' union, NYSED, is very powerful out here. It's a very important union and makes the community and the schools a better place. The Eastern Long Island Hospital, that's $11.99. Hospital Workers Union, it's a very important union, which is incidentally part of U.S. Labor Against the War.
Oh, yeah. Can you organize undocumented people who
people do
in
all
the
time.
Shadows, as they say?
Of course. Look at what is going on with the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Florida. And look what's going on with the Farm Labor Organizing Committee in Michigan and Ohio. With North Carolina, they do a lot of organizing of Mexican labor, farm labor, agricultural labor in North Carolina and also in Mexico. They go to Mexico where the labor comes from. So the Coalition of Immokalee Workers in Florida. Well, these are people who are picking tomatoes. They're tomato pickers. Immokalee?
Yeah.
That's a town in Florida, in central Florida. And they have made alliances with consumer groups and with labor groups to push the purchasers of these tomatoes to pay higher prices and to make sure with the growers that those higher prices are passed on and higher wages to the pickers. And then they've also negotiated all kinds of things like toilets in the field, having protective equipment when you have sprays. And the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, FLOC, did some excellent, wonderful work, again, working with the growers, with the small farmers, going with them to deal with the big companies. In FLOC's case, it was Campbell Soup and Vlasic Pickles. So you can organize them, and people do. Is it easy? No, it's not.
Do you know of anything like that that's going on around here?
No, I don't.
So are you going to do it?
No, I'm not. And somebody who's a good organizer can come in here and do that. It's not at all impossible to do. It's hard. 50 years ago, the Black Panther Party was out here in South Old Town in Cutchogue at I Am Young Potato Grading and on Riverhead with a breakfast program for the kids because there was a lot of migrant labor. And at that time, it was not Hispanic. At that time, it was all African-American. Mm. And it was coming up from Florida and from the Carolinas. And so there was some real organizing that happened that time. And it was pretty good. It was pretty successful. It made a difference in people's lives. We organized a clinic, a health clinic for people.
I wanted to ask you what you're going to be doing for the, I don't know, next months, years, couple of years.
Yeah, I have some writing projects in mind. And we'll see how they turn out, and we'll see what they amount to. I don't feel like talking about it on the record just yet because it's still gestating and coming into existence.
But you must then be very good at organizing your time to be doing all these different things and still getting enough sleep, I presume.
Well, having retired helps with the sleep. Having all the commuting and grading papers and preparing classes and all that. Yeah, it's multitasking a lot, you know, and doing different things at different times of the day and, you know, checking your email and moving this along, and then it's in somebody else's court, so you move something else along.
But in general, I get the feeling talking to you today, or having you talk to me today, that you are sort of pretty optimistic about things. Is that not true?
Everybody that talks to me says, geez, you sound like you're optimistic. Everybody says that. And my wife explained to me why that is. And it's because I do things. So as soon as you do things, because we've been talking about things that I'm involved with, and I'm doing, you know, writing and Korea and this one and that one and this thing and the other thing, and the fact of activity, people take as optimism. You know, I'll come back to, there's a difference between being hopeful and being optimistic. It's the only way to live, is to go to try to confront this stuff that's going on. The Chinese call it qi. I'm, you know, fairly assertive about what I think, and you know, I have ideas of what I want to do, and I go do it. So if people take that for optimism, you know, Mao Zedong wrote a poem once that had a line in it, 10,000 deeds cry out to be done. Well, that was the English translation. And I read that, and I thought, yeah, 10,000 deeds cry out to be done.
You hear the cries.
Yeah, you can't do everything. You do what you can do, you know. Somebody's going to organize these farm workers out here. It's not going to be me. I got other things to do. You know, there's endless things to do. And I'll just do what I feel that I can do with the skills that I have and the background that I have and the connections and the contacts and the resources that I can put into whatever the project is. And that's what I try to do. I just don't want to sit around and watch all this stuff happen. And it affects me too, you know. I mean, I've taught at Stony Brook for 50 years, and the budget crisis is horrible. It's just horrible. We have homeless crisis out here. We have people who don't have apartments. Well, where's the money from the housing and urban development that could help with that? It's all going to the military. Well, it's right here in this area. Now, I go respond to a fire, and there's all these people living in this building because they have no place else to live. That's dangerous. Now, that's me. I'm responding to that. And my friends and my people that I work with, and brothers and sisters in the fire service who were going into that building. The fact that the housing and urban development budget is being slashed, that's right here in Southold. I look at that and I say, well, I'm not just going to, you know, respond to that scene and walk away and say, well, wasn't that too bad? There's 18 mattresses in there or whatever. People live the way they have to live. Not that they want to live, you know, in those crowded conditions. They're forced by circumstances to be there. Well, what can we do to alleviate those circumstances? What can we do to address those things which affect us directly?
Thank you very much, Michael.
You're very welcome.
Thank you very much for talking to us about so many things.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you anytime.
That was Michael Zweig talking about his work as a labor activist. You can hear North Fork Works on the first Wednesday of the month at 7:30 p.m. North Fork Works is produced by Tony Ernst and archived on hazelkahn.com. If you'd like to hear more interviews like this in the future, please go to wpkn.org and make a donation. We would really appreciate your support. Thank you.